doctor, lawyer, chef. And I'm like, see, like, it's on the list. I get a dishwashing job at 14 and this is it.
Let's just get going. What's your position? Where are you located at? What's kind of going on in your life?
All right. So, I joined the Coast Guard, man, about 12 years ago and left the civilian industry after about 10 years. So, you know, at 14 started doing the, let me take these off. So the glare, started doing the basic, you know, bussing tables, washing dishes thing for a while. And it's kind of worked my way in different restaurants in South Florida and, you know, fell in love with it. But, I met my wife and, you know, she was working a 9-to-5 and, you know, living that life and just didn't really line up as most of us experience.
Yep. I totally get it.
Yeah. It's, you know, and she was cool with it. It wasn't like she was like, you need to figure this out or else or anything, but you know, I'm starting to now look at different avenues of what I can be doing to, you know, better, you know, suit our lifestyle together. Mm-hmm. And, a buddy of mine, he was already in the Coast Guard driving. Come here, Yuki. Sorry.
It's all good. It's all good.
He was already in the Coast Guard driving boats and stuff. And he had worked in the restaurants as well. And, you know, he got familiar with their food service program and, you know, was like, hey, man, you should look into this.
Right.
And I'm just like, how good could it be? You know what I mean? Like military food service. Let me put her up. Yeah, sorry to destroy.
No, you're good. You're good.
Come on. Go lay down. Go lay down. Thank you. Since you're recording, you want to just start it over, man?
No, let's go. I like it. It's like normal. The whole point of this podcast is to talk to like just people like me, like just chefs in the industry, you know, not all the glam and glitz and all this stuff. It's to, you know, so we can kind of connect and see how other people are living their lives, you know?
Yeah. Like me, man. I'm hanging out here on a Friday morning and chilling with the dog and getting ready to go on a little weekend vacation.
Nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. So but yeah, man. So he, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so your friend was in the Coast Guard and he was doing stuff and.
Yeah. And he mentioned it to me and I was like, all right, man, I'll check it out, you know, kind of like downplaying it. And then I started doing some research and I was like, oh man, they're doing some cool shit, you know? And,
okay.
You know, so I looked into their program. It's accredited. You know, everything transfers over to the civilian side for college and everything else. I was like, all right, well, worst case, if I do it for 4 years and I don't like it, I've got a bunch of undergrad credits because of the programs that they put us through in the Coast Guard. And then I'm going to get free college through the GI Bill to go to any school that I want in the country or even abroad, actually. There's things I've learned now since being in. That you can utilize that to go travel overseas.
Really?
A buddy that just got back from France a couple years ago who went to school out there on the Coast Guard's dime, man. It's pretty awesome.
Wow. Okay. So you actually, so the Coast Guard, you went through there, they had a culinary program through the Coast Guard?
Correct. Yeah. We have our own culinary program. Yeah. Okay. So every branch of service has their own, what they call a school. We call it a school. Some branches call it AIT, just depends on what they do. But it's our own program. Like if you wanted to be a machinery technician, then you go to engineering school. If you wanted to be a bosun's mate, you go to like a seamanship boat driving school. If you want to be a, you know, just every job has their own trade school that you go to. So if you want to be a culinary specialist, they send you to culinary school.
Oh, that's wild. That's cool.
Yeah, man.
I had no idea that even existed.
And the cool thing about it is, you know, when I joined, man, I didn't, you know, I'm from South Florida originally. And when I joined, I didn't know much about the Coast Guard as somebody from South Florida probably should know. Mm-hmm. And so like when I got there, you know, I'm in boot camp doing that whole thing, you know, you get yelled at for 8 weeks, you know, it's, you know, building character, all that good stuff. I don't know what to expect moving forward from that. Right. Mm-hmm. So now I find myself in Napa Valley, California, going to our culinary school out in Petaluma.
Oh wow.
And I'm just like, dude, why? Like if somebody was able to explain how awesome this was going to be to me before I joined, I would have done it so much sooner.
Really?
You know? Yeah, man. It was just like unreal. Like just like the opportunities that were coming with it. You know, we're we're there doing wine tours and figuring out, you know, pairings and things like that on our weekends. And on the weekdays, we're learning, you know, all the, you know, basic culinary techniques and, you know, starting from knife cuts to stocks and sauces, right, meat fabrication, fish butchery. Just everything that you need to know to cook in the industry is being taught to you,
wow,
by trained professionals, man. It was amazing.
Yeah, and you're in Napa Valley, which helps. Right. You know, I drove through there last year for the first time in my adult life, I say, and it's beautiful. I mean, yeah, it's wild. We did that whole trip from like the Redwoods down to like San Francisco through the Napa Valley.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was eye opening. We stopped at what's that Michelin restaurant over there? French Laundry.
Yep.
I didn't go in, but we took pictures out front.
And when I was in school, we actually got a reservation to go.
Okay.
And the guy who booked it, I guess, didn't really disclose to everybody in the class how expensive it was.
Yeah, it's like $300 a person.
Yeah, and that's like without the pairing.
Oh yeah, that's where it starts.
Right. And so we're like 3 or 4 days out from this reservation because he booked it like the week we got there.
Right.
And he's, all right, so, you know, we got this reservation for 8 of us to go. And he's like, all right, it's going to be about like $300 a person. Everyone looked at him like, yo, man, I don't have money like that.
We're in school.
And so, right. And so I think 2 or 3 of the 8 people or whatever it was backed out. And he was, all right, let me call and see if I could change the reservation. And they just laughed at him. They're like, man, we cannot knock off people on the reservation. We can redo a reservation for a later date, but we can't adjust. So that was my opportunity to go to the French Laundry that fell through.
Oh,
man. It's funny you mentioned that, man. We, during our school out there, we have a lot of guys now that will go and do weekend stages there.
Cool.
While they're going through our school, because it's in, you know, it's maybe 15, 20 minutes away, yep, from the schoolhouse. And then we also have some, I haven't talked to these guys, but a buddy of mine who was an instructor out there said there's some people that got out of the Coast Guard that now work there full-time.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. So is it like a full campus there, or what was the style? Like, what kind of school was it out there? Was it like cabins, or how was it set up?
It's a military base.
Oh, it is, you know, a military base.
Correct. Yeah. When I say military base, though, not like, you know, tanks and you know, guns.
Right.
And stuff.
Right.
It's a Coast Guard base. You know, it's got all the rules of a military base, but it's got super laid back environment when it comes to your personal life and extracurriculars and things, right, like that. I mean, the base itself has, you know, an E club, which is a you know, a bar and a hangout type spot.
It's like a civilian base, kind of, is what they call it, kind of, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely military.
Right.
I wouldn't say civilian base. Okay. More military, but not when you think of like going on to an Army base or a Marine Corps base.
Okay.
You know, it's not that same, you know, militant mindset that's, okay, going on there. It's much more, chill, I guess you, okay, could say, when it comes to that. Yeah, we have a lounge. We have a place to hang out. We have there's a bowling alley. There's a movie theater. I mean, there's, okay, everything you need for your day-to-day,
okay,
you know, luxuries. But you're not confined to that space by any means. Like, you can go out in town and, right, hang out and, you know, experience Northern California,
right,
every day after school or on the weekends, you know?
Right. Especially being close to San Francisco, the Chinatown there is nuts if you've never been.
It's insane.
Okay,
man.
Yeah. If it's – you can only explain it a little bit to people when they haven't been there, but it's the most authentic thing you can think of. You know, there's like people drying their clothes above their restaurants and hosing out their small little, you know, spots and stuff. It's like, you know, until you go there and experience it, you can just be like, oh, the Chinese food's probably really crazy. It's like, no, the whole culture is like right there. You know, it is wild. So I experienced that for the first time too last year. So.
It's a cool experience, man. The way I explained that to somebody was, one, it makes New York City Chinatown look like Disney World.
Really?
And two, there are people who have not left,
period,
that Chinatown,
nope,
who live there. That's like their only bubble, man.
That's
like
it.
They haven't even gotten out of there to know what the rest of San Fran is like.
Nope.
Like, that's their world.
Nope. And you see it too. I mean, these people, they live there. They live above their restaurants or in the back of their restaurants, or, you know, I think it's really cool that it's preserved in that little spot for, you know, for whatever reason, but it, when you go there, it's like you're stepping outside of San Francisco into China real quick to buy some stuff. Yeah. And then you come back out. I mean, whatever you can find or whatever you want is there.
Yeah.
You know, so what happened?
I've only been there once and I was blown away.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never been to New York at all. So I can't compare it to the Chinatown up there, but, you know, I imagine it's not a small thing either.
But, no, it's amazing.
You know,
it's amazing.
Yeah. So what happened after school? Like what, after you did your training, your culinary program through the Coast Guard, is there like placement? Is there, what happens after that?
Yeah. So, you know, getting close to the end of your 12 week, I think it's now 13 week culinary program. They give you a list of billets, you know, job assignments that are available around the country. Mm. And so once you get that list, depending on how you performed in your class is going to be where you get to choose from on that list. So I was fortunate enough that I got to have my first pick of the list, and I ended up going to a 225-foot buoy tender out of Atlantic Beach, North Carolina. They call it Fisherman's Paradise out there on the Crystal Coast.
Okay.
Kind of right between Outer Banks and what's the spot in South Carolina?
I couldn't tell you.
Myrtle Beach.
Oh, so Myrtle
between
Beach.
Between Outer Banks and Myrtle Beach. Yeah, okay. You know, right dead set in the middle there. And that was an amazing experience, man. That's what really set the tone for me moving forward in the Coast Guard. When I first joined, like I said, I wasn't sure if I was going to do my one tour and get out or make it a career, or, you know,
right.
what it was going
to You didn't know what to expect, really.
No idea what to expect.
Right.
And I kind of am glad that I went into it with not low expectations, but no expectations.
Yep.
Because it allowed me to form my own opinion as I went, you know.
You know, if more people thought like that just in general, like whether it's for a job or whatever, if everybody goes into something with no expectation, usually it's a better outcome. You know what I mean? Because
right.
you know, you've worked with people that come in and they're already pissed about something and they don't even know the job yet. You know what I mean? So
they don't give it a shot.
They don't give it a shot. So you got to, I try to take every opportunity with no expectation. Even there's something to be taken from everything. And at least you're not going to be pissed off or disappointed, and you're allowing yourself to actually learn something, you know, and that's really awesome that you did that, because a lot of people wouldn't, you know?
Right. No, that's a good point, man. That's a really good point, because that's the advice I like to give to a lot of new people, especially when they're doing anything, but especially when they're coming into the Coast Guard. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody's first unit experience is always, you know, what they anticipated it to be or
of
what
course.
They thought it would be. But it's designed intentionally that you're only stationed with the same people, you know, for a few years at a time. And it's an ever moving, very dynamic situation. That way there's no stagnant and no complacency within individual units, because we're military assets that are getting a job done.
Right.
You know, so you can't have things kind of sitting still for too long and being the same, because you know what happens when people get complacent.
Right.
So I always tell everybody, hey, even if it's not what you expected something to be within the first even 6 months to a year, that whole dynamic is going to change. The person who is leading that unit, the commanding officer, the captain, whatever you want to call him, he's going to be gone in, you know, at the most 2 years. And somebody else is going to come in and will change the whole way that the thing flows. So like you said, like, you know, forming your own opinion and letting things kind of play out and take time to see how they go is so important, man. Mm-hmm. It really is.
No, it really is. And, you know, I try to tell that to young chefs too, because, you know, not that I'm like an old chef, but even though I'm 32, I got my first job at 14. I've been doing this for 16 years. I consider myself a little bit of a veteran, you know,
you've been doing it a bit. Yeah.
And, you know, you go from like your beginning restaurant to restaurant to restaurant, and you're learning kind of the same menu items, but they're different on every single restaurant. And we've all heard from like the new guy, well, that's how we did it over here, and we did this over here. It's like, well, we're not there. Okay. First of all, we're not. We're here. This is how this guy likes to do it. And that's it. There's when you leave a restaurant, you want to take everything from it and be a sponge. But then when you go to a new one, you want to start that over and do it again and use those skills that you've learned over the years, the techniques to fulfill the new place, because they are going to do something different, and get rid of that. Oh, well, I'm going to go into this already knowing all this stuff. It's like, no, back up, go in knowing nothing. And then if you happen to have skills and techniques to make you learning the new place easier, that's the whole point of the experience level. You know what I mean? Instead of going, oh, well, no, that's the wrong way to do it. It's like, no, that's the way we do it here. You know? Right. And instead of it being a negative thing to you, you go in with no opinion and you go, oh, that's how you do marinara sauce here. Okay, cool. Versus, oh no, I didn't never did it like that before. It changes your whole outlook on when you're going to do new experiences. And that's not even in just cooking, you know, that's a life trait. You want to take things positively. You don't want to, you know, get all, you don't want to go in with these like negative aspirations about stuff. You want it. You want to be able to learn, and you can't do that if you already have a preformed opinion about it. So,
well, your guard goes up, and when your guard's up, you can't take anything in, you know?
Yep. You can't take anything. And I think we all do that when we're starting, because we're, you know, it's new or just out of high school or whatever, and all these crazy places. And, you know, we're learning how to be an adult and pay bills and have responsibilities. And all this stuff is happening in such a short period of time that your workplace becomes like, you know, you think that everybody's out to get you. But it's in the end of the day, nobody's out to get your job. Nobody's out to get your stuff. As long as you go in and do your thing, you have nothing to worry about.
There's enough jobs for everybody out there.
There's plenty of jobs for everybody out there, and nobody's gunning for yours.
If anybody wants to come and hang out.
Yeah, you know what? And at the end, we'll plug everything. At the end, we can really push that message too for somebody that doesn't really quite know, and that to know that the Coast Guard has a culinary program that you can sign up for and do and not put yourself in a bunch of debt and really figure it out. That, I mean, that's an opportunity that people should know about, and in my opinion.
Yeah, it's like the exact opposite of putting yourself in debt. I mean, we're doing $30,000 to $40,000 bonuses. 30 if you have zero culinary experience right now, 40 if you have a degree.
Right.
You know, and then the list goes on when it comes to the benefits, man. I mean, you know, we could buy houses with $0 down with a VA loan.
Right.
No money down, and they'll sell you a house.
Right.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And then you get a housing allowance to pay for the mortgage on top of that.
Yeah.
You know, full health care for me and my family. I've never had a medical bill. My wife's never had a medical bill since I've been in.
Yeah.
So do you get 30 days paid time off a year?
Right. So do you ever have to go out of country or anything? Or do they station you places? How does being in the Coast Guard as a culinary person, how does that work?
Yeah, so as far as being stationed outside the country, we have a few assets in Bahrain, but it's a voluntary program, and a lot of guys are like lined up to go do it because it guarantees that after you do that, you get your top pick of any other job, and it's only a one-year assignment.
Okay.
Plus, all your money is tax-free while you're over there. There's a lot of perks to doing it.
Right.
And it's in a very friendly, safe zone. I mean, the waters you're patrolling are, you know, think about it. You're out in the Middle East patrolling the ocean. So I'm sure they come across some stuff that, you know, or could be pretty threatening at times. But as far as like where you're living and the way you're living is, you know, pretty awesome from what I've been told. I've never been out there. I've never volunteered to go out there. All of my work has kept me stationed pretty much on the East Coast of the United States by choice. That's where my family's at. That's where I want to be at.
Perfect.
With the exception of the school I went to, obviously out in California.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as like where you get to go station, I mean, we have Coast Guard units all up and down the East Coast, West Coast, all through the Gulf. And then even some inland as well. I was actually stationed in Owensboro, Kentucky for a bit on a river tender that patrolled the Ohio River. Pretty much just setting buoys through the river. And I cooked independently on that boat for a crew of 19 guys. So I was pretty much a private chef on a floating food truck for 3 years,
right,
where I did all my own shopping, all my own menus, all my own cooking. And then I had someone help me with the dishes every day, which was awesome.
Right.
Yeah. So it was like the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And it's cool because, you know, that tight knit crew becomes family.
Of course.
And you know what they like to eat, you know what they don't like to eat. And then you also try to challenge them to try new exciting things. And you know, it's not just, we're not just heating up MREs and bulk food. You know, the biggest unit that we have is a land-based unit in Virginia, which is at another schoolhouse that we have where, you know, we obviously cook for the Coast Guard men and women that work and train there. And they'll do like 500 lunches a day for 500 members.
Okay.
But there's 30 cooks putting that out, and that's one unit. Every unit that I've been on, when I was in North Carolina, I had 50 people on my boat, and there was four of us cooking for 50 people.
Right.
When I was stationed in New Jersey, I was there twice. I was on 110-foot patrol boats. We would go out for 3 or 4 days at a time, and I cooked for 16 people by myself for those two tours. And then when I was in Kentucky, like I mentioned, I was on the river tender there, and I had 19 people. I did that for 3 years and cooked for them independently. Since then, I've worked myself into a really awesome job. Your first question you asked me, I haven't even answered yet, not purposely. But,
it's all good.
So my role currently is I'm the executive chef for the Department of Homeland Security Executive Dining Facility here in Washington, D.C., still in the Coast Guard. And all the chefs that I work with are all in the Coast Guard. So it's a special program that we have within the Coast Guard. It's actually called the Special Command Aid Program. Okay. So what that is pretty much we're private chefs for high ranking officers. So all the admirals in the Coast Guard, get a special command aid that work inside their government quarters, where we not just cook their meals for them and host, banquets and receptions for them, but we also maintain all their entertainment spaces of their quarters. We take care of their uniforms. We're kind of like their, glorified butler.
Yeah. What's the word? Concierge, you know?
Yeah. Concierge. Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Concierge. Yep. You kind of take care of all of their outside, you know, needs and make things a little easier for them.
Exactly. And we do, like I said, we do a ton of receptions and things. So I'm in that program, but I run a full service restaurant that is in the Department of Homeland Security headquarters building. And so, you know, we're constantly cooking for, you know, the secretary, the deputy secretary, all the higher ups at DHS. And we have a spot that they come in and eat lunch at every day.
Okay.
And it's pretty awesome, man. And then on top of that, you know, we host different receptions for foreign delegates and all that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, that's I was going to ask about like the food and what you cook and the situations. I know you said you worked on a few of the boats. What's the kitchen like on those boats? Is it like pretty dinky? I've been on some nice yachts, but their kitchen's dinky, you know? And then I've worked on some stuff with, you know, not so bad galleys. So what's a galley like on like a 16-person boat that you're on?
So I would equate it that of like a like a food truck, man. You know, you got like your little walkway in the center in front of you. You know, you have a two burner electric, you know, eye stove, and then like an 18-inch griddle, and then a regular size oven that holds half sheet pans.
Okay.
And then you'll have a, you know, just like KitchenAid type mixer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, basic stuff, and maybe, you know, 6 to 8 feet of counter space to work on, but it's just you in there cranking it out.
You know, 6 to 8 feet's not that bad.
I've worked in way smaller conditions, not on a boat before.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know? I always have to ask because, so Pete, the guy in the group, he works on a lot of boats too. And
yeah, no, Pete will.
Yeah, so, you know, we always bounce back and forth because he's on the other coast of me, you know, about 2 hours away. But whenever I'm on a boat, like I'll send him a picture and I'm like, yo, how's your galley? And he'll be like, oh man, that's not a bad galley you're in or whatever. Because like I said, you could be on a 100-foot yacht that's $10 million and the kitchen sucks on it. Or you could be on, you know, a 40-foot yacht or whatever, 60-foot yacht, and the kitchen's really nice. So it just depends on when they built it, who cared, you know?
Who cared about it?
Yeah, who cared about it or not. And some of them are just unreal, that, you know, granite floors and all this stuff. But when you're on a boat, it's just a different world. And it sounds like on yours, everything's typically electric. Is that what's?
It's all electric.
It's all electric. Yeah. No
Everything's
gas.
Electric, and that's for safety purposes right. when it comes to, you know, because we're our own fire team, we're our own safety. Just like when you're working on the yachts, you know, yep. the crew of the yacht is taking care of all that. So we try to limit any sort of possibilities for casualties and things like that. Now, you know, not to say that, you know, some of them don't have induction burners, which obviously is still electric, right. but a little bit more efficient than those eye plates that, you know, are built into these.
Oh, you're
these
talking about those ranges. Like the black, like you're like cast iron plates almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Like 0 to 100 is like, you know, it's either not hot or just burning everything.
Okay. Yeah.
You gotta really learn how to throttle those bad boys back.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, that's those are challenges that, you know, people don't think of when they're going into the culinary world. You know, they go right. and work in some restaurants and they're fully equipped and they have, you know, rationales and combi ovens and all this stuff. I don't even really have much experience with any of that stuff. You know, most of my right. kitchens have been pretty, you know, pretty basic. Not that they're not fully equipped, but like, you know, they're not.
Yeah, not state of the art.
Yeah, you know? they're not like country club kitchens where like this shit gets used twice a year, you know? Right. So, but having. Like been on boats and stuff like that. Those are these things that in the culinary world, you don't think when you're starting that you're going to end up at. And then when you do, you're like, right. Oh shit, I'm cooking in the water right now. You yeah. know?
No, you're right, man. Yeah. And it's the boat thing is cool. So I know there's a lot of people who are interested in that industry, you know, because of the ever changing schedule and, you know, you get to kind of pick your schedule and everything else. And, that's exciting to people. And that's what's cool about doing the small boats in the Coast Guard is, you know, for 3 years, you're attached to that boat, 2 or 3 years, depending on where you're located. And during that time, you're traveling all over the area. Some bigger boats will go overseas, you know, for short amounts of time, you know, during a patrol. So you get to see the world. And then you get to you know, cook for your crew of people. And you get to cook whatever you want. So, you know, to backtrack a little bit, what you were saying about, you know, when we're bouncing around from restaurant to restaurant, you're kind of cooking the same things all the time, maybe with a little bit of different variety. Mm-hmm. In the Coast Guard, we're never cooking the same two things twice.
Really?
Like every day is a different meal that's getting put out. And same in the position that I'm in now in D.C., we cycle our menu every week. Every awesome. Week we have a brand new menu that we're offering our guests. Now we have a few staple items
of
that
course.
Are always going to be
of
on
course.
There. But more than half the menu switches out every week. So it's constantly challenging the guys that I work with and
keeping your brains you know, moving.
Right. So every Wednesday, you know, I go to my team and I'm like, all right, what do you guys want to make next week? And then we talk about, you know, menu development and we work stuff out. And then I start shopping for everything that we need on that, you know, Friday. So they get everything and can kind of start, you know, getting things going. And then come Monday, we roll out that new menu.
Awesome.
And they run it through the week. So it seems like every day I turn around, it's Wednesday and we're developing a new
menu. I know,
menu,
that
but
is.
It's awesome because it keeps everybody sharp, man.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, I've always been right. a huge fan of like quarterly, like new sheets, is new menu sheets or whatever. And, you know, keeping those, that's so for me, I used to change my, we call them fresh sheets. So we'd have our typical menu. And then on every table, we'd have like, you know, a small menu that had like maybe 5 items on it. Right. And then quarterly, we would change that. And the things that didn't sell on the regular menu, we'd pull off. And the things that sold really good on the fresh sheet, we'd put on. And then the same 5 or the, and then every quarter we had a different seasonal or whatever, 5 things just so that we could try stuff out without stressing everybody out and changing like the whole menus. And I mean, this is obviously for a large group and large, you know, restaurant day-to-day running. It's totally different than, you know, the catering, which is what I do now, or cooking for people like you do now. It's just, you know, it's different, but it's a right. huge benefit to be changing your menu at least quarterly or more or weekly or whatever, because then people aren't getting stagnant. You know what I mean? When people get stagnant, they start looking for things that are wrong. And for me, I like to keep learning. So I want to assume that my staff likes to keep learning. So it keeps them busy, keeps them fresh, keeps all of us fresh, you know? And, you know, that's a really good idea. So let me see.
Yeah, it's been great, man. I got an amazing team that I get to work with every day that is so talented. And it's just, it's wild to see that everywhere we go, you know, since I've been in, I run into so many talented chefs in the Coast Guard. And I think a lot of it is because of, people getting kind of burnt on the industry. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot of guys out there that are talking about, you know, the work-life balance and how we can make it better. I got a chef that's down in Farmington Country Club, not too far from here, is a good buddy of mine, Mike Matarazzo. He's a big pusher of the work-life balance and trying to remold the mindset of a chef that it doesn't need to be 80 hours a week getting the shit kicked out of you in order for you to, you know, be a badass in the industry and be successful.
Right.
You know, yeah, we've all done that, you know, but like, is that what the stigma needs to be? And I'm a true believer that the answer is no, you know, like it's not, you know. So when you're able to give people the opportunity to be creative and have fresh ideas mm-hmm. and make new food and make exciting food and not be just, you know, killing themselves doing the same old grind day after day,
right?
It creates an environment that is very inviting for people to want to be there. So I go into work, man, every day. You know, my team's, you know, in the kitchen, they got the music going, they're singing, they're dancing, they're having a good time. Yeah. They're, you know, they're producing, but they're enjoying what it is they
right.
do, because I give them the creative freedom to be able to do whatever they want to do. And not everybody has that luxury. Mm-mm. Because you have a menu that's the menu. So you're making the same thing over and over again. And yeah. I've never had to deal with that in the 12 years that I've been in the Coast Guard, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And, you know, I'm yes and no about, you know, about how like hard you have to work and if you have to pull the long hours and stuff, because yeah, we've all done it for sure. But for me, it just depends on where realistically you want your career to end up. Right. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, a line cook should never have to pull those crazy hours. You know, that's not for them. There are worker bees. Right. They're the ones that need to be, you know, rested, and the quality of life needs to be there. And we want them to come to work. You know, the long hours and all that stuff that should fall on the leaders, really, because they're the ones driving the business. And if they want to drive that biz, it's not our cook's job to drive our business. You know what I mean? So we want them to work hard. We want them to work efficient. We want them to enjoy themselves. But at the end of the day, it's our responsibility to drive our business. And a lot of, you know, I don't want to say everybody or whatever, but like a lot of cooks want to skip that line cooking thing into the chef thing, into the owner thing, and not having had experience that working 80 hours and not having experienced that stress and the weight of everybody on them. They want to skip all that and go to it. So that's where I think that some people do need to know that grind. It doesn't need to be the norm.
I agree with that. I like that.
It doesn't need to be the norm. You know, it doesn't need to be like you're expected to do this and I'm going to underpay you. So blah, blah. No, it doesn't need to be that. But if you want your career to end up in a leadership position, in an executive chef position, in an owner position, for you to skip through and go from your 40-hour work week to business owner, it's you're setting yourself up to fail. Because I've always been a fan of, like, my whole family were like super hard workers, and I'm not gloating or anything like that, but like, you know, 50 or 60 hours a week is a norm for me. It's typical. And not everybody's like that, but everybody wants to be in the position of owning or being in charge. But then when they get to that where it's mandatory and there's nothing you can do and it's your business and you can't shut it off and you're responsible for your employees and you're responsible for keeping everybody busy, and you don't get the luxury of working 40 hours a week anymore. You know, even if you're physically not in there, there's a lot of pressure. Yeah.
My question to you on that, though, mm-hmm. is how does that cycle get broken where you're not – where the person in charge is the one putting in all those hours, because then at some point that line cook is no longer that person.
Right.
So then they're no longer getting the experience that you talk about to be able to do that. It's kind of a double-edged sword.
It is. And that's why podcast for me is I'm learning everybody's stories and things, because I want to see what people's opinions are on it. And I know there's people that want a lot but want to do little for it, and then I know people that work their ass off and never get there. So
right.
this, I want
to, I think something that could be said about that though, is the level of responsibility that somebody has mm-hmm. will encourage them to put in more time.
Right.
Because they have an investment in it.
Of course. You
know? Like with my current position, right. I'm there about 60 hours a week on maybe 50 hours a week on average. Mm-hmm. I do not need to be there that long. We're not even open during that amount of time.
Of course.
But there is a lot of things that I'm doing behind the scenes
yep.
in order to make it better because I have that ownership of the place and I want it to be as close to perfect as it can be for me, for my team, for our right. guests, for the entire organization, right?
Right.
So with that though, eventually I'm going to get to a point where it's running at the capacity that I want it to run yep. at. And it's not going to require that much time to be able to have to make that happen.
Yeah. Right? I'm going to
get everything right. So it's going to be running. So then what do I sit back on my hands and say, okay, it's good to go. That's it. And just let it go. No. People like me,
you have to
are going
something.
To now look for the next thing
right.
to try to build on it and do that. I don't think that's something that everybody possesses.
Right. And I think that it's important that people hear that because
right.
a lot of people think they possess it. And I don't ever want to put anybody down. I want to build everybody up. But sometimes you can be a really great leader and not so good at the job that you're leading. And then sometimes you could be the best at your job, but you're a terrible leader. And a lot of people need to hear that because just because you're a really good chef doesn't mean you can run a restaurant. And just
look at like sports, for example.
Right.
Like baseball is a prime example. I don't know if you're a baseball fan or not.
Yeah, a little bit.
Some of the
yeah.
best coaches in baseball, the best managers, the best hitting coaches, they were not the best players.
Of course not.
You know, but they understand the fundamentals, they understand the game, and they have a different mindset because not everybody can do both. You can't always teach. You can't always, you know, perform. Sometimes it's the people that are in those positions that aren't the best, but they need good people to be able to
right.
lean on to get the best out of it. So,
right.
I mean, there's the old saying, if you want to be successful, surround yourself with people that are better than you.
Period.
You know,
period. There's no threat there. And baseball's right. good too. Cause you know, maybe they know all the fundamentals and they know how to win, but they're, you know, physically or mentally not able to be in the moment doing the work to get there. Right. So that makes them a leader. And then I know how to do this. I can't do it physically myself, but if you guys listen to me, I will make us successful type of thing.
Right.
And gaining that trust from your staff and stuff is huge.
Yeah. Cause that's where the leadership challenge comes in is that
yeah.
you have to know that, okay, I'm no longer the one doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I need to give them the tools and the
exactly.
you know, avenue to be successful, but then I have to allow them to do the things
yep.
that are going to make
them can't
successful.
Like hold their hand and hey, do you this know? And then watch them and make them all nervous over their back. You got to let them kind of right. find their thing. And even if it's not exactly as you want it, but it's still coming out good or whatever, you have to give them a little bit of discretion because,
right.
you know, otherwise, you know, you've worked for people that are like hovering over you or all this. You're like, whoa, give me some space, you know?
Oh, and I catch myself.
I know, I do it too.
The kitchen, I'm curious of just what's going on.
Yeah.
Not so much that I am like dying to correct it.
Yeah.
But then as soon as I see something that's happening, it's like, it's not so much, it's not how I would do it. It's
yeah.
like, if it's not
right
you know what I mean, then I'm gonna step in and say something.
I call it riding the line. That's what I call
yeah.
it. It's you're riding the
that's
line
exactly what it is
you're right? riding the line between, you know, friend and coworker and boss. You if
yep.
you can't get too far over on the friend coworker side because then people start, you know, not respecting your position, but you can't get so far over on the boss side that everybody's pissed off at you all the time. I tell my staff all the time, it's really hard.
It's
I got to ride this line because I don't want you guys pissed. And I'm straight up. I just tell them that. I'm like, I don't want you guys pissed off at me all the time, but I also need things done a certain way. So anything I can do for you guys to help me do that, let me know. If not, this yep. is kind of like, it's what it is. It's really hard.
It's hard.
It's really
the hard.
Hard.
It's the hardest thing in the world.
Right.
It's like, you know, we just, it's what we do and it's what we're, you know, the reason why you get into these positions is because you're pretty good at what it is that you do. So you want to make other people You want to build them up right. and get them there as well. And sometimes in a world that is a skill-based, where I mean, our job is a skill-based job. There's some people that will just never get it.
Right.
Just, it is what it is, right?
It is what it is.
Like they can have basic fundamentals and skills, but when you find someone that you know right. has all this potential,
yeah,
it's like, I just want to give them everything I possibly can to be successful.
Yeah.
Sometimes it comes with a little bit of micromanaging and it's yep. the worst. It sucks, you know, but I think there's also ways, like you said, you're upfront with them and you let them know, you articulate to them that, hey, I know I could be a pain in the ass. And if I'm being a pain in the ass, turn to me and be like, Chef, you're being a pain in the ass.
Yeah, tell me.
You know, like, let me know. Like, right. and I'll back off. You right. know?
Or I'll judge the situation.
Or if the situation yeah. does not call for that and you tell me that, I might tell you to fuck off.
Yeah, it all depends. And I know when I'm being a pain in the ass. And sometimes I'm just in the mood to be a pain in the ass. But sometimes those days are needed to bring everybody back into, you know, scope. Because
right.
even as leaders,
it's,
you know,
it's things, a humbling thing.
It's too. A humbling thing. But people.
Right.
You know, we let people get away with a lot more than they think, and then they think that we're riding them, but it's like, no, we've let this go a little bit and now it's going a little too far and I got to straighten everybody back out again. And so some right. of the times those pain in the ass days, you know, are positive for everybody because it makes everybody fall back in line and right. people don't realize that they get out. So, hey,
one of the things that I've done is kind of challenge myself uh-huh. and to allow my team to have that, you know, that freedom. And mm-hmm. I won't even step foot in the kitchen until service.
Oh yeah.
I will literally sit back and knock out paperwork and do the things I have to do when I have like my, you know, I have two other kitchen leads that are in there with the team. Right. So I put my trust in them that they're going to,
as you should,
they're keeping up on everything and I'll stand back and then I'll come out when food starts coming out and just observe and see what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm never disappointed.
Right.
I'm never disappointed in that. Yeah. The only time I ever get disappointed is when I'm in there while they're cooking, while they're prepping, before it's finalized, because they are their own toughest critics, and right. they're going to make sure a good product comes out at the end of the day.
Right.
So if I'm tasting it only three quarters of the way in and it's not seasoned properly or it's not finished or it's whatever, now they're just getting discouraged.
Right.
You know? So I try really hard to – it's hey, hard, let me just man. Try the final product.
Yeah, you know? It is. It's really hard. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've going for a little bit. How do you want to close this thing out? You want to tell people where to find you?
I want to talk about a couple of the options with the Coast Guard, if
okay.
that's cool with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it. I'm 100% for it.
Sure. That. So, like I've mentioned a lot, I don't want to beat the horse at all. But you know, the program that we have that we're offering right now is way better than what I had when I came in, and what I had was amazing. We still have our culinary school out in California. Still the same type of thing where once you go to school and you finish, you get to go out to the fleet and do your thing. But these bonuses didn't exist when I joined, you know, so to come right out, starting with $30,000 to $40,000 in your pocket, is just such a good leg forward. The other big one that we have that we didn't have when I joined is what's called lateral accessions. Now, lateral accessions is coming online like yesterday, pretty much. And what that's doing is taking industry professionals and allowing them to segue into the Coast Guard's culinary program. And we're taking into consideration their previous experience to give them a higher rank when they come in. Mm. So when I joined as an E1 when I went to boot camp, came out of boot camp as an E2. When I was in school, I became an E3. Then I went out to the fleet as an E3, then became an E4. And then another couple years later became an E5. Right. So I'm like 3 years in, 2 years in by the time I make E5. And we're now allowing people with experience to join as an E5.
Wow.
So you're pretty much skipping four pay grades and going right into being an E5 if you have industry experience behind you. And that could even be increased to an E6 if you have any sort of prior military service,
oh, wow.
Any, you know, higher executive level leadership positions. It's on a case by case basis.
So how do they figure that out? Is there like a placement test? How do they know, even though that you've gone through the program, how do they judge you on that?
So what it's going to be is when you go to your recruiter to say, hey, I want to join and I want to join as a cook, you're going to provide them with your resume. Mm-hmm. And then that resume is going to go to a panel of other culinary specialists like myself, who are leaders amongst our rating. When I say like myself, not me specifically, the job that I'm currently in has nothing to do with selecting this stuff, right. But people of the same rank that I am that are in those
positions
that run our rating. Right.
Okay.
And they're going to look over it and look over the skills that you possess, the jobs that you've had, the things that you've done, and that will determine if you get that. And, based on the conversations I've had with the right people that I network with and that I work with day to day, it's going to be happening, and it's going to be pretty liberal with that, that, you know, allowing that to happen.
Right.
Because if you have the ability to cook, that's what it's taking you to get to that E5 level. And then at that E5 level, now you're going to learn the Coast Guard leadership sides of things that will help you get to the E6, E7 level.
Okay.
So the way I'm seeing it, man, is if you got good culinary experience and you're a squared away person, you're joining as an E5 right off the bat, starting to make really good money, having all these benefits that I talked about, have this bonus. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to, you know, look at it as you wasted X amount of years in the industry. For me, I'm not saying I wasted those years because I gained invaluable knowledge and experience over that time.
Of course.
But 10 years in the industry, translated to nothing for me when I joined the Coast Guard. I started at the very bottom, going through the same culinary program, learning knife cuts that someone who's never touched a knife had.
Yeah.
You know,
awesome.
And that'll be all accelerated. Boot camp would be accelerated. You know, if somebody's joining at 35 years old, who's got life experience, they're not going to send them to boot camp with 18-year-olds who don't know how to do laundry.
Right.
You know, they're going to go through an accelerated program. They're going to be, you know, treated as an adult. And the same thing with our school. You'll fast track through our culinary program if you've already had culinary school and that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's really
the big one, man. That's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. And you know what? It'd be really cool to do this again, you know, in a little while, maybe a couple months or whatever, and talk about it again, just because I think people should know about, especially if you can join up to 30. What's the age that you can join up to?
So there's waivers, man. I had a buddy that joined. He was almost 40, man. He was
right. And there's not another branch of military that'll allow that.
No, there's not. The Army might have some waivers in place. I've heard of that happening. Mm-hmm. I do have a buddy that joined the Navy at 40. But it's very few and far between.
Right.
But in the Coast Guard, we have lots of waivers in place. You know, there's our tattoo policy is very lax, as you can see. Most branches you can't have, you know, visible tattoos.
Right.
You know, now the you can't have face tattoos and things
of course
like that.
Not.
But you know, if you want to do it and you're interested in doing it, I'd highly recommend reaching out to either a local recruiter, myself,
right?
Which, you know, when we share this, we could put my contact information. And I'm not a recruiter by any means, and the only skin I have in this game is just trying to better the rating we call, you know, our jobs ratings. You know, better our culinary, our workforce and strengthen that. So we can, you know, get more people out there doing the job and getting the same experience that I've been so fortunate to have these last 12 years.
Right. And it's also important because there's a lot of jobs, especially in our industry, they don't have benefits. They don't have health insurance. They don't have retirement plans. They don't have all of these things. And if you can join into your 30s, you know, you're, and you've been doing this a while, and maybe you're just not getting the positions that you wanted, and maybe you're just not, you know, filling whatever void it is. This is a really good opportunity for those people too, because now you can put yourself in a position where, you know, maybe I'm not going to be the executive chef of the Ritz-Carlton, or maybe I'm not going to own some, you know, Michelin star thing, but I love what I do and I want to keep doing it, but I want to get a little bit of benefits and set myself up for the rest of my life type of thing. And I feel like this is a perfect opportunity to do something like that.
It's the most amazing opportunity, man.
Yeah.
And in the benefits thing, one thing that I didn't mention when you said retirement benefits. So when I joined, we had what's called the legacy retirement. So I have to do 20 years in order to collect a pension.
Okay.
They've made that better. Now you don't have to do a minimum of any years to get a pension. Even if you just did your 4 or 6 year enlistment, is my cat's in the background. Even if you did a 4 or 6 year enlistment, the Coast Guard is now matching you up to 5% of your contributions into your 401k.
Okay.
And then you will get that when you retire, when you get out, you will be able to still build on that and collect that money. So before, you got zero if you didn't do 20 years.
Right.
You could do 18 and a half, 19 years and get out and you get no retirement.
Wow.
Now they're allowing you to do a minimum amount of time and still collect a benefit
from that.
At least
something from when you were there.
Correct. So on top of your free college, on top of your VA loan where you can buy a house with zero down, mm-hmm. on top of all these things, now they're matching you in a 401k at 5%. For no reason, just doing that. And then you can also collect the full, you know, retirement once you get done at 20 years. There's now still a pension for that on top of the percentage they matched the whole time. So I don't have that. I wasn't able to get that because that happened, you know, long after I started.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I think this is really cool. And I think people are going to really enjoy, you know, hearing about this because this isn't a typical... You know, you're the first person I've met that works in the Coast Guard as a chef. So, you know, I hope people can take something from this and learn from it. And I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your time, Chef. Thank you so much for having me on. And hopefully we can do it again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Savor Food Podcast. Really enjoyed talking to all of you. Have a great day and go kill it.